In episode 123 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, we're flushing away $9,253,000.
Welcome to episode 123 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is February the 2nd, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my brother James Furlough.
You know, if there was ever an episode when we were going to get into a fight on air, this is going to be it. Because I am in such a bad mood. I want to get into a fight. I'm just warning you now.
That's not good, James, because I'll be honest. You know what? Honestly,
we were that close pre-show.
I was gonna say I might be in the perfect mood because you know what? I'm just gonna go to bed.
I didn't finish the game. I turned
how
it off.
How could you?
The first play after halftime, I went game's over, and. I hung around for, I don't know, what was it, like five, six more minutes, and then...
You want to know where I'm really at, James? I can't understand why they didn't have a 2013-2014 season. It's such a profitable enterprise, you'd think they'd at least play a few of the games. They wouldn't just completely cancel the season. It seems ridiculous, right? That was so painful. It was so painful. I went to a really cool party with a lot of amazing friends, and I had to tell them at the end of the night, look, I don't feel this. I'm going to say this. I really appreciate you guys opening up your house, and in about 2 days, I'm going to think this was a great party. Right now, I think it was awful. I was just, oh, gosh. I can't even, oh, my.
And just so you know where I live. And, I'm clearly in the minority where I live. You know what? It's one thing to lose. It's another to replace your team with trash cans.
Yeah, it was weird that they found high school students that were as big as NFL players, but were actually high school students, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you just wouldn't think you could find that. It's just weird.
You know what? Maybe props to Seattle. For completely shutting them down. Maybe they really are that good and we didn't realize it. Maybe the 49ers were that good and we didn't realize it. You know, because they actually like played really well 2 weeks prior.
Yeah. I think the game was more lopsided. The teams were more lopsided than anybody realized. I think the leagues are more lopsided than anybody realized. I've been hearing all year long that, you know, we're in a tougher league. And you're like, whatever. They're all great. But I think it was a combination of it's a tougher league and that was an atrocious you know what, though, James? This isn't a sports show.
This is completely different. Show.
I know. This week, like every week, we're going to be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera corporations dealing back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. But most importantly, not the sports teams they're sponsoring with their commercials. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a shirt. This is actually a really cool show. Some really cool stuff happened this week, and I gotta like bring myself back and go back in. But before we get into the heart of the show, you do have a short disclosure you want to throw our way, and so let's do that. Let's rock and roll, James.
So for my first disclosure, I would like to disclose that this morning's message was about Habakkuk. And how he was questioning God, why are you doing all of these bad things? And God answered him, he said, all these bad things are happening, do something about it, essentially. And God came back to him and said, I am doing something about it. I'm raising the Babylonians so I can wipe you guys clean off the face of this earth. And Habakkuk was kind of like, oh, that wasn't the answer I was expecting. you know, as one would react. And I feel like Habakkuk right now, and so my disclosure is that I am dealing with an unexpected outcome right now. And as such, slightly feisty. My other – you like that. It was a good message this morning. I think it was completely unintentional, but anyways. The other disclosure is that I work for HP, which thankfully is highly predictable, and so I don't have to worry about that. But even despite that, I do not work for HP or represent any of HP's opinions.
That's good. That's really good. You know the other thing that makes this hard, James?
Hmm.
I haven't had any caffeine in 2 weeks, but what makes it even worse is actually the tough part. Last night, I don't think you logged into the SimCity since 4 o'clock this morning, but Jimmy and I made some progress in the region last night. And I did not go to bed until 4 o'clock in the morning. It was like at 2 o'clock in the morning, I was like super tired, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to finish this one little thing, and we're going to bed. And then it was 4. So I'm feeling good. I'm feeling really good. But I'm just like, okay. If you want to follow us throughout the week, follow, you know, get pictures and messages and stuff. Our social media, in short. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. My Instagram is NextWiggin4. You can go to either one of those services and follow me. I'd appreciate it. Check out my stuff. It's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Don't worry. I don't overwhelm you with too many posts. Which is sort of a way of saying I do a bad job of making my stuff interesting.
You can find me at James Furlow on Twitter and jamesfurlow.com.
If you want to find out more about the show, which is highly recommended, this is I would go to furloughbros.com. It's a great website. Everything we talk about throughout the week is going to be there, or throughout the show is going to be there. It's just a good list of interesting tech articles that we kind of cover. All the articles we talk about are going to be there. It's awesome. Also, YouTube video link if you're coming from the podcast, or the podcast if you're coming from YouTube. And also the show cuts. So it's highly recommended. Check it out and go there or be square.
Yeah, definitely. So, I think you go first.
I am so ready for this. Okay, so something awesome happened this week. And it's one of those things where you're like, I don't even know how to like wrap my head around it really in a So basically what happens is, have you ever heard of the game, the heck is it called? EVE Online.
Yes.
Okay, it's an MMO RPG, massively multiplayer online role-playing game, but it's not just a MMO RPG like World of Warcraft. It's a highly dynamic, very free space exploration type game. You get spaceships, you fly around, and you mine stuff, and you trade stuff, and you build up coalitions, and you drive your own storylines. You basically, you know, make up the game. Yeah.
So I had a coworker who played it, and he said it was really stressful. I mean, he enjoyed it, but it was super stressful. Because he's like, dude, if you get blown up, it's like months of work down the drain. And I guess one time he did lose a ship and like had to go smoke a few packs. It's like, but he goes, it was fun, it was interesting, but I don't fully, I know it's space and stuff, but so, like.
So basically this is what happens. It's actually a really interesting model that they build, and I kind of want to play it, but everything I've read is like, A, you have to be serious about it, and B, it's stressful, especially if you're serious about it. It's not a game you bite off easily. So basically what happens is in EVE, all video games, they got to pay for the servers like this. They got to pay for the servers, got to pay for the developers somehow. And so obviously you get a month of game costs a certain amount. You go to their website, it changes over time, whatever. It's like $10. It's, you know, this is the ballpark for a month. But what you're basically doing, as far as I understand, having not played it yet, is you buy in-game credits with your $10, and then with those in-game credits, you buy a license to fly your ship, quote-unquote, and that's how you play the game. It's basically what you do. But the thing is that it's worth in-game credit. So if you're in the game mining and building things and selling and building up a wealth of credits, then those credits can be used for paying your monthly dues. So unlike World of Warcraft, where you have to pay your month-to-month no matter what, you don't have to pay your month-to-month here if you don't want to, or if you earn enough. Those credits also go into things like ships, and the big thing here is that these ships have a dollar value that the game helps calculate. So you kind of are a credit value and that the game helps calculate. And the thing is since there is a credit value and there is a dollar value attached to the number of credits, effectively, those ships have a dollars and cents worth that you can sell and buy the ships for, and people do. You know, your little, like, dinky ships can be, like, $10, $20, $30, $40, but the bigger ships are a little more expensive. So let me set the stage for you. Basically, what happened was, early Wednesday morning in Australia, There was a one group, one alliance. They've been renting out this space station from another alliance. It's all going on in game. No mods putting in storyline. This is just people have developed their own thing. And basically, what happened was the one alliance that was using the space station failed to make their regular monthly payment to the group that, quote, owns the space station. But this is the thing. You know, possession's 9/10 of the law. And so the other alliance came over into their territory and said, hey, we want our space station back. Give it up. You're not paying, and you missed the payment. And the group that had the space station said, take it from us. And the group that said, you know, that wanted the space station back said, okay, we will. And a small skirmish started. Now, a small skirmish starts in this game all the time. I mean, it's a normal thing. It's part of the fun of the game. People battle, you lose your ship, and then, you know, and it costs you money. It's a bad thing. And specifically time, a lot of time. But because of the specific, like, you know, it's like World War One type secret alliance things and stuff, a lot of interests got involved in this small skirmish, and this skirmish started to grow and grow and grow as more and more people, hundreds and hundreds of people, started to get involved.
Wow.
And it started to go on for hours until America woke up, and then all of a sudden the flood happened. It ended up with over 2,200 players.
Oh, so you're saying U.S. players.
Yeah, literally,
okay.
And basically, one of the greatest war that this game has ever seen took place. Now, the biggest ships, your real capital cruisers in the ship, are called Titans. And there was a lot of them. There are shots of this game that I've seen where it's like, it looks really complicated, and you're like, whoa, that's cool. And then I saw somebody go through and actually highlight all the miniature ships where you actually have thousands of ships all flying around fighting each other, and you're like, holy cow, how did the servers even keep up with this? This is crazy.
Wow.
So this is a pretty big deal. So the most expensive Titan, the most expensive capital cruiser that got destroyed, the value that was placed on it was about 22 billion ISK, which is the in-game credits unit, which has a dollar equivalent of about $5,500. That's right. You can buy a nice used car for the value of this capital cruiser that got destroyed. That's all right. There were 70 of them that got destroyed. Clocking in for a approximate real-world dollar value for this war, about $200,000 just gone in a video game.
That's sweet, oh my man. Gosh.
I know. I just like that makes me want to play so bad. I can't stand it. I've never seen a video game be advertised. And oh well, I mean, because it's, you know, what is it? So like, what you do is you go in and you pay your $10 a month, right? And you build up your ships, and your ship gets more and more value. But it's not real value, I guess. I mean, like if you really get into the trading of stuff and building things and you treat it sort of like a game, I could see how you would take that incredibly serious. But for me, I would just brag about how powerful my ship is and how expensive it is. I wouldn't like think of it as dollars and cents in the bank. For whatever reason, I couldn't. But the fact that it has like this real legitimate value to it, and so much destruction and mayhem can happen just sort of spur of the moment because everybody got a little bit froggy. Thanks a lot, Australia. I don't know, dude. It's just like, it's awesome. I just think, I don't know. This is just awesome.
So again, this coworker, he had his main account, and then he had what he would describe as a slave account. So he paid $20 a month or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Because you could, you know, and he would essentially had an alliance between himself. But then he also bought this program that he could download that would play the game for him, essentially.
Oh, geez.
And so it would let him do remedial tasks like go mining or whatever the Eve equivalent is of that.
Right. Oh, they're literally mining. They go mining.
Yeah. And so he could set that off and be like, go do this task, go earn me some resources, I guess. And I remember his setup at home is pretty sweet. You'll like it, where he has two 30-inch monitors right next to each other.
Oh, man.
And then he actually has two towers underneath. And
what?
So one of them is for work, and then, you know, it's his work laptop, whatever. And then the other one is his gaming PC, and he's got a single keyboard and mouse with a switcher next to it that'll let his keyboard and mouse switch between computers. And
I
was like, whoa, this is pretty awesome. We were traveling together for once, and so I went to his house, and then we carpooled to the airport, and it was pretty funny. We got. Again, he was playing it, and so he was doing his work stuff, and he just kind of had it going on the other screen, and he's like, got all this together, and he's like, okay, I'm ready to go. Okay, 1 second. And he switches over to that, you know, work stuff's all shut down, and that's ready to go. And he, you know, does some command, right, and then watches and goes, okay, we can go. And, you know, he's like, yeah, that's just going to work for, you know, while we're gone, and then I'll come back and I'll have some more resources and it'll be good. And, he got not to this level, but he got into it. He was a guy, he did like World of Warcraft for, I forget how many, it was like 8 years or something.
Wow.
And then just quit it cold turkey one day and went, oh, I'm done. And then so he branched out to EVE Online and now he's doing other stuff. But
See, it's funny to me. I don't know. I kind of like the idea of EVE Online because the cost of entry is so low that if I don't really take advantage of it, which I won't because I don't do that sort of thing, unfortunately. I mean, I don't have the attention span for it.
I feel like you would be better with like Minecraft, honestly.
I played Minecraft a lot for about 4 days and then haven't touched it since. I loved it. I thought it was really, really fun.
Okay.
And it's just that I just have a hard time focusing with video games, which is probably healthy because it's not like I.
As long as you know that
TV.
About yourself.
Yeah, it's not like I watch TV. I just, you know, I just need to. I've had to like really focus on, with like Pokemon, like just forcing myself to pick it up every once in a while so I don't feel like I completely wasted that money. I actually don't feel like it, but it's, you know, justifying it further. Actually, like I said, and I played SimCity last night. That was fun. I don't know. It's just so cool. And I love science fiction, stuff like this. Oh, man. I love it. It's just so cool.
Probably would enjoy it. The graphics are awesome.
That's the one. That's actually my biggest hesitation is that I don't have a computer designed for heavy graphics because I don't. The one really interesting thing about this is, the one last interesting factoid about this I don't want to throw in before we can move on is the fact that basically they, one of the consequences of this little battle was Already the battle has, and it is from the article, already the battle has had an impact on the economics and politics of the EVE's universe. As both sides scramble to rearm and rebuild, the price of in-game resources, or resource tritanium, is starting to rise. I don't know, it's just kind of awesome that you're like, you know, these games, you know, that you just sort of, you know, you hope they become cool and kind of like these epic stuff. You know, every once in a while this kind of stuff happens and it has actual like consequences and, you know, and they follow economic models. It's weird. It's cool. I mean, it's funny. It's the one thing that lends credibility to the idea of Bitcoin, where this is not even designed to be a currency. And yet, it effectively has become one, you know? And, you know, how much more so can something that's actually trying to be one, doing the exact same thing, become a currency? So, oh, very cool. Very neat.
The future's awesome, man.
Future is awesome. Speaking of the future,
mm-hmm.
Facebook might have potentially revealed the future to us.
Really?
Facebook. So this last week, Facebook turned 10. Congratulations, that's news. Facebook also revealed their quarterly earnings, and now a majority of their revenue comes from mobile. So they are officially a mobile company now.
That's exciting.
Yeah, they did that. What is that? It took them a year, I guess, from, well, you know, from their going IPO to do that, and they said it was going to happen. So now that they're fully a mobile company, they kind of got to look to the future and, you know, figure out what that's going to look like. And so they revealed a new app, which I believe is actually being released into the wild tomorrow, or if you're listening to this
today,
after the fact,
is in the future.
Today, it's February 3rd, so, you know, however that works for you. It is called Paper.
Yeah.
So what it is it's Facebook timeline reimagined, essentially.
Okay.
To be more like a paper where you have cards, and on each card you can flip through them, and it has your status updates. It's got stories that have been shared by your friends or just trending stories on the network. You can still like and comment on them, I believe. But it actually has a horizontal scroll instead of a vertical scroll. And again, it's these cards that you're flipping through. So they're going for the news digest look of things. And from what everything I understand, people are like, yeah, once you use this app, you won't go back to their standard Facebook app. That's what I've been hearing. They're actually going to have some of their content will be curated by actual editors. So you'll be able to like, you know, pick a topic, science, technology, or something, and they'll have specific articles just for that. So again, it's not just who you're following. You can go beyond that to the broader network, and they will surface interesting content for you now. So yeah. Becoming a little more Twitter-esque in that regard, maybe a little more Flipboard in some regard. Yeah,
it's not a bad thing. Number one complaint of people I hear is, you know, the content of the news feed, not the layout. So if they can do anything to improve the content, which I think is the bigger deal of it, honestly, is the fact that, yeah, these are going to be curated results for, you know, specific search, you know, specific topics. That's a big deal, and I think it's going to be really good for them in the long run. So I'm glad to hear that. I'll give it a try. Obviously, I give lots of stuff like that a try. Even
and it's
stuff.
Just their way of – and it's iOS only for now. iPhone specifically, so not even – I mean, unless you want the blown-up version on your iPad.
Yeah, I mean, and, it's funny. I realize that Android has like 80% market share and the iPhone 5C didn't sell at all and everybody's miserable about how terrible Apple is, but everybody's still like your big boy apps. They still come out for iPhone first. I mean, you I don't know. It's you know, that's
so I have an HP Slate.
Yeah.
It's right here. I'll show it to you to prove that I still have it.
Nice.
There it is. HP logo, whom I do not represent, and it's
Use
a good thing because I'm about to bash on them. I have an HP Slate. It has convinced me further than I was already convinced that I want an iPad. Two reasons. Well, multiple reasons. But the first one, which is just kind of an annoyance, it doesn't charge all the time. Just from a pure hardware standpoint, do you know how infuriating it is to plug in your tablet and then come back the next day and have it actually be a lower percentage than when you started?
Wow, that's untenable.
And then what you do is you wiggle it and it goes bling, and you go, oh, okay, I think I got it now. And then you come back and it's even lower. You're like, no!
That was happening with my iPhone, and they profusely apologized and replaced it for free because that sort of thing's not supposed to happen.
I could ask. They might replace it if I...
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to... Yeah, since you haven't asked, it's probably unfortunate to bash on the customer service of Husey Packard.
Yeah, I'm not bashing a customer service. I'm bashing a product. Well, yeah. I read some forums, and I'm not alone.
Okay.
And, yeah, that was kind of my... Because I was like, what do I do? And because they're like, change the core, change this, try this. There is one thing that I have found that will consistently charge it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plugging it into my Mac. That's it. It doesn't work when I plug it into my HP PC. Nope. Doesn't work. If I plug it into a wall charger, it charges it faster when it works. But I would say it only works 25 to 30% of the time.
Which is not much of the time.
Great ratio. No, it's not. And, yeah, it's eternally frustrating. So I should call and just see what the chances are of...
I'll even let you amend this little, you know, diatribe.
So the other issue that I'm running into is it's on Android 4.1, I believe.
Yeah.
And, the rest of the world's on 4.4.
Right.
And so a lot of the apps are no longer optimized for it. I don't even think they were to begin with. And so they're just kind of buggy. Things don't work the way I would like them to. For example, Feedly, which is an app that I use a lot. I use that app a lot. Like more so than my mail and calendar app a lot. Okay? Right? Yeah. That's probably my number one used app. Yeah, it crashes all the time.
That's super irritating. Especially if you're like halfway through an article and it remembers that you read it and now that article is gone.
Yep, and it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is for me, I sit there and go, well, I'm for my number one use case, I'm not going to use it. So, having said that, the Kindle app works fantastic. And when it's charged, I do enjoy reading books on it.
Yeah. You know what else you would enjoy reading books on? An iPad.
It's true.
Yeah, that's rough, man. That's rough.
So, all that to say, yeah, dude, I can see why Facebook would target this first, and because it's known, it's consistent, and so they're going after it. It looks interesting. They're also very much getting into the single-purpose apps, right? They came out with Messenger, okay, cool. And now it's like, this is just Timeline, from what I understand. I don't think you'll be able to see a list of your friends. I'd be shocked if that were the case.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe. But yeah, so they're trying to get into these single-purpose stuff.
I've been saying that that's what they need to do for, you know, a while. I think that that's the future. You have one folder with all your Facebook apps, and each one is a highly optimized, high-performance version of that one task. And that's what they do with Messenger right now, and I like it a lot. I mean, I don't use Messenger a ton, but...
Well, so what are they right now? So Messenger was a winner. They tried their Photos one, which bombed, and so they tried... So then they bought Instagram.
Right.
They tried Poke, which bombed, and then they tried to buy Snapchat.
Technically, they tried to buy Snapchat. Then they tried Poke. Then they tried to buy Snapchat again.
Yeah, got it. And so it's kind of... But this is for their own product. You know, they're not trying to copy someone else. And so my guess is that it'll actually go pretty well.
Well, they're not trying to copy anybody.
No ads at first. That's kind of weird.
Well, you know, it's like I get what they're doing. I don't hate their ads, honestly. Like, I don't even notice them, but I don't hate them. I can deal with it, so I'm fine with them actually making money with what they do. But you know, I think it's good. I'm glad they're moving forward with this kind of stuff because it's their future. It's the only way they're gonna make money.
Yeah, so this totally reminded me of another app that I've actually been using a lot, and I really, really like it, actually. It's an app by Yahoo.
Yahoo! Yes.
Yeah, and I'm gonna talk about it, and I guarantee I'll get done, and you'll go, oh, I'm going to download that right now, if you're not already doing it. Okay. It's called News Digest. Do you remember... A while back, they bought Sumly from like that 12-year-old or something like that for $30 million.
Yeah. I don't think he was 12, but I get your point, yeah.
Yeah, I think, no, he started working on it when he was 12, and they bought it when he was 15. That's what happened. So he's still just crazy awesome, whatever. And they ended up shutting down Sumly, and they're like, oh, well, who knows what they're doing? Well, it's back. Or this was a while ago. Let's see, when was this article? January 7th, okay? So... A little under a month ago, they've come up with a News Digest, which is kind of crazy. Like, the app looks really cool. And what they do is there's two issues. There's the morning edition and the evening edition. And it gives you 8 to 10 articles each edition. And it's summaries. So usually it has a summary, a quote or two. It has little boxes for more information, you know, whatever's got a picture, that kind of stuff. And what I thought was super interesting in it was, you know, their whole thing was like people are annoyed with the never-ending stream. And they're like, and we want to give people something where they can read it and be like, okay, I'm done. I finished. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's what they wanted to do. And what I thought was super interesting is this this guy who they were interviewing, he says, you know, these articles, they're decidedly not personalized, okay? Everyone sees the same stuff, okay? Yeah. And they're like, oh, that's kind of interesting because Yahoo was all about personalization for a while, right? And they were like, yeah, we know. But what they said, like, they go, we're not saying that, you know, because these are – they're not personalized. They're the same. They're standard for everybody. He goes, we're not saying that these are things you're going to be interested. We're saying that these are things you need to know about.
Huh.
And so, yeah. So here, let me open it up real quick. And
I got it. I got you. So February 2nd, this is actually kind of a bummer. I'm bummed out by this, but Philip Seymour Hoffman, Oscar winner, found dead in New York City apartment at age 46 is the top one. We've got sports, Super Bowl quarterbacks and their ads, politics, Christie, booze and boosters for embattled New Jersey governor, world Ukraine president's return from 4-day sick leave as opposition demands change, world Iran time to seize opportunity for long-term nuclear deal negotiations. Interesting. Sports. Odd. The Horcrux was right. Potter author regrets Hermione relationship, which I think she's wrong about. I think that was one more. The last story in.
Let's see here. It's a summary, which I can read because it's super short. Harry Potter's best friends, Ron Weasley and Hermione Granger, finally became an item, but now their creator, J.K. Rowling, has admitted she made a mistake by marrying them off. Really? Hermione, whose quick wits gets the teen wizards out of many a scrape in Rowling's hit novels, would have been better off with hero Harry, the British author, said in comments published by the Sunday Times. Am I breaking people's hearts by saying this? I hope not, said J.K. Rowling. Rowling's interviewer was none other than British actress Emma Watson, okay, who played Hermione in the blockbuster movie series based on the Potter books. Rowling has sold more than 450 million copies of the Harry Potter books, which were made into 8 films starring guys. I think there are fans out there who wonder whether Ron would have really been able to make her happy, says Emma Watson. Then they got some tweets and some photos and stuff like that. What? That's so...
I'm going to say, whatever. I actually, it's funny. I sat there and I think that is part of the brilliance of if Harry had gotten Hermione, I think it would have been crazy lame. And it just, or I should say this, one of the things that is so good about Harry Potter is how the sense of unfairness of her universe, of the odd relationships that get together, or
I
know this is like totally off topic, but at least it's not football. It's one hand, you've got the Harry Potter group, which everybody are mismatches, mismatched relationship, mismatched jobs, mismatched with their universe, trying to defend what's good and happy and right. And then you've got the bad guys, and they're all very proper and formalized, and everything kind of fits into where it should have gone. Everything makes more sense. You know, you think about the Malfoys. They all look the same. They act the same. They come from the same socioeconomic class. And that's, very much the same with all of them. They're all driven by this sense of everything needs to fit and make sense in our universe. Whereas the Hermione, whereas Harry's side, everything's very much more chaotic and kind of, there's weird oddities that kind of, that run through.
That is way deeper than I ever thought it could go. But all right.
Yeah. Well, and more importantly, it's like it's the people who die and when they die and how they die. It's not either. There are only a few characters who die, and it seemed fair and necessary. Spoiler alert: Dumbledore is the big one. Outside of there, the deaths always seemed unjustified and somewhat random. And there is so much truth of kind of how life works in that book. And the fact that Ron ends up with Hermione instead of Harry Potter is part of the brilliance of continuing that theme. And I'm just I'm glad she went with her instinct, because she was dead wrong. She's dead wrong. It is so much better the way it is, that because it's so much more real. It's so much more authentic that, yeah, it is kind of not what you would have expected. I
don't know, until you got halfway through the series and then it became super obvious, but whatever.
Well, but I mean, it's not what you expected in that it's not classic literature where the main character, the bad guy, and gets the girl. He gets a different girl.
He did get a girl. Yeah,
I know.
It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, and that's really and truly the Ginny thing is she didn't develop that relationship greatly. It's, and which is whatever. That's not what the story was about. It was about three friends.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's awesome about it is that sometimes you just need to accept the fact that when you write or you tell a story, you just got to go with your instincts, because it may be brilliant, it may be stupid, but nobody can tell. Even the people creating it, they can't really tell. And it's so easy. And once something is brilliant, don't touch it, because it's so easy to ruin it. Jeez. I mean.
So that app was successful.
That's awesome, yeah. I downloaded it. I like it. I'm in.
So all that to say, I mean, it's Facebook's coming out with their paper, and that's cool and all, and I think, it'll be addicting or whatever, but it's kind of man, Yahoo hit one out of the park with that one, I think, and they deserve a lot more recognition for pulling that one together. But,
yeah.
They're Yahoo, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, what they got to do is they got to get more people using it, and they probably need to do some form of advertising to get people's attention. I think they want word of mouth to take over, and I probably will share it. So who knows? Maybe in 6 months, it'll be something bigger. The nice part about it is because it's Yahoo, it doesn't have to be an instant success in order to survive. It can have slow and consistent growth and still get support, as long as it's growing. So.
Yeah, cool. Well, and they'd be super smart to figure out somehow, integrate that into their website, create apps for the other systems, and you know what I mean? Use it as kind of a core. Because I thought what was interesting is one of them, it had a video in it, and I was like, oh, okay, it looked interesting. And so I clicked on it, or tapped on it, and, and it was a Yahoo, news video thing. I was like, oh, cool, you got me, And they can start promoting other stuff. But yeah, it was interesting, for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll see how Facebook's one does. Like I said, they've kind of bombed the last couple, but this one was I find that if they're replacing one of their own services, it seems to be okay. as opposed to trying to copy someone else and getting out of their core competency. So I feel like it'll be good, and it's been getting good reviews.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Speaking of core competencies, Google is deciding to focus more on one of theirs and get out of a non-core competency.
Not even really. Well, yeah, I guess. Okay, yes. Tell me about it.
I feel like what I said was true.
Yeah, you're right. It's fair.
All right, good, good. What am I saying here? Oh, so Google is selling off Motorola.
Oh, baby. Motorola Mobility. Get rid of
that.
You're so junk.
To a horrible company who should be wiped from the face of this earth, Lenovo. I'm not biased. I'm not biased. I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't represent HP.
Yeah, so yeah, that's right. I don't represent HP, but I do have feelings about them.
Hey, you know, you're a lot. Honestly, that's fair. I mean, if you've got, just because they're, you know, they align with your employment, doesn't mean they're wrong.
Yeah, and you want to know the crazy part is, like, Lenovo wasn't big, obviously, at one point in time, and until semi recently. And there was a guy who helped Lenovo go to the bigs, you know, really just helped them take off. And so now he works for HP, which is cool. But it's kind of funny. He's like, yeah, I helped create this juggernaut of a company, and now here I am trying to beat them again. So there's
that's
that.
I mean, that's a fun twist of – if you were responsible for that, if that was your life story, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. We'll see how he does. But, so Lenovo is the largest PC maker in the world. They overtook us last year, 2 years ago, something like that. And they're based in China. They bought IBM and kept the ThinkPad business alive, and that was how they kind of got into the game, really. And now they're getting into the handset game. Purchase of Motorola. So let's see. Google purchased Motorola and a whole bunch of patents for how much money was it?
$12 billion. Yeah.
And in that time, they have come out with the Moto X and the Moto G, and they've set up a manufacturing plant in Estados Unidos. I've seen the Moto X. It looks like a pretty cool phone. That's one where you can customize it because they make them on demand, essentially. The guy I was talking to, he goes, oh, it's an awesome phone. Unless you want to take a picture, then it's a piece of garbage.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it sounded like he was like, I think they were going to have a software fix for it or something, but he's like, yeah, it's... Because it's bad. Your better flip phones have a better camera than it for some reason.
Really?
Yeah, I know. I was surprised. And so, taking pictures on my HP Slate, I'm not overly surprised. So, like I said, Google bought this company. They invested a significant amount of time and energy to it, and now they are reaping the rewards of that investment with an ROI that is not positive.
it's rather negative.
So they're selling it for, we'll round up, for $3 billion.
Yeah. That's not much money.
It's a little less than 12.
Yeah.
Well, they spent $12 billion to buy it.
Right.
I guarantee you that is not where the money stopped.
Okay. Right. Now, yes. Okay. That is an important piece of this calculation. But let me make it a little bit better news for Google. It took me a couple days for this to come out, but I think it's worth noting. On Wednesday night, Google announced it's selling off Motorola Mobility to Lenovo for just $2.91 billion, a couple of years after acquiring the business for $12.5 billion. On the surface, it looks like a massive loss for Google, but after taking a deeper dive, this might actually be a great deal after all.
Really?
Because, yeah, that's what I think is really cool about this article. So basically, the first thing they did as soon as they bought it was they sold Motorola Home to Aeris for $2.35 billion. So they immediately went from 12.5 down to just over 10.
All right.
Did I just – 1 second. Shoot. Wait a second. Wait a second. Oh, that's bad news.
So, just wanted to send all of you out a friendly reminder that if you're feeling generous, if you like the show, you can check out our online store. It is furloughbros.com/store. You can check it out. We got some cool swag. Got some hats, shirts, whatnot. They're for sale.
I've got a power strip underneath my table that I absolutely have to move because I keep accidentally turning it off. It's not the one that controls the main computer, but it controls all the peripherals and everything, so everything just died. All of a sudden, it was gone. So sorry. Okay, back to what I was talking about. So they sold off Motorola Home, brought it down to about $10 billion. Motorola also had $3 billion in cash that got directly transferred to Google. So now we're down to $7.15 billion. After accounting for the $2.9 billion sale price that Google spent, it's only about $4.24 billion for the rest of Motorola's business.
Wait, where's the $2.9 billion sales?
That was the last one for the rest of Motorola. So basically they sold off Motorola Home.
Okay.
Yeah. So now they've only lost $4.24 billion as opposed to the astounding, you know, $9 billion that was being thrown around. Also, you have to take into account that Motorola has $2.4 billion in deferred tax assets. The purchase price drops down to a measly, by Google standards, $1.6 billion. And so they haven't talked about what the tax assets. They haven't disclosed what's going to happen with Lenovo, how much of that Lenovo gets, how much Google gets to keep. But presumably Google will get to keep some of that. So basically what ends up happening is for $1.6 billion, if they get to keep the tax deferred stuff, they got the 10,000 Motorola patents, and then they signed a deal with Lenovo basically saying, hey, you guys get to use these patents if you need them, obviously, since, you know, we're not selling you much if we don't give you access to that. And also, just days before this, they cut a deal with Samsung where they're going to do patent sharing and stuff, and presumably Samsung knew that this was coming down the pipe, and it's the reason why they realized that, you know, they're not competing directly with Google anymore, so they don't mind, you know, playing nice again. It's not nearly as bad as it sounds on the surface. They're obviously keeping... what's it called?
That is loud, whatever that is.
Yeah, sorry, that was my iPhone. Stop vibrating. What was I going to say?
Okay, so it wasn't a $9 billion loss. It was more like a $1.6 billion acquisition of patents.
Right, which is expensive, but, you know, it happens.
You know, unless you stay in business, I guess that's worth it.
Yeah.
And for them, it's not. It isn't a lot of money, which is crazy.
Yeah, I know, right?
Huh, all right. Well, the important part is that they're getting out of it. And Lenovo gets to apply their method of business to try to beat a competitor, to go up against Samsung and Samsung, Apple, Microsoft, BlackBerry.
So I have a question. I've never owned a Lenovo computer. I'm sure I know people who have owned them, but I'm not very aware of what they do outside of the whole ThinkPad business. What did they do to get, you know, to reach their you know, gigantic, you know, position of, you know, how many they're selling? How do they beat HP?
Well, do you want my cynical answer? which is the only one I have.
Then yes, definitely.
So Lenovo is a Chinese-backed company.
Right.
So, you know, they needed to build a factory, so they built a factory.
Right.
It really wasn't a question of cost or, you know what I mean? They just, they essentially are a highly subsidized company. And if you want to sell a computer in China, it's extremely difficult to do unless you're Lenovo. You know, they get total home team favorites. And as you know, there's a couple people in China. And, you know, so they have awesome – their market share in China is just unbelievable, which really is the reason why they, you know, take off. And then once you hit a point of scale, you can actually compete against other manufacturers in the world, which they were able to get to. And so that was – honestly, that's the big piece of it is they are a Chinese-backed company.
That's not cynical. That's just realistic. I mean, and that's the home team advantage.
Well, there's probably some other stuff in there, but that's what I choose to, you know.
Well, I mean, I guess it's
you know, they're probably well managed. They probably got a good marketing strategy, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, business stuff. But, you know, and the products, you know, they did buy a genuinely good product to sell.
Right.
You know, the ThinkPad is heralded as one of the strongest machines out there. So they had a good start. And that was part of it. It was, oh, yeah, our Garmin bought it for us. No big deal. So.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting to me is the question that what am I trying to say here? I think the reason why I asked the question is because, you know, yeah, those are all things that are true. But I was wondering if it was like a special case, or are you going to be like, well, you know, HP, you know, seeded a bunch of its, you know, HP did something wrong. It wasn't anything that they did right. It was something that everybody else did wrong. You know, which is a different thing. And I think, what's interesting to, or the interesting question to me there is it something that Samsung has to worry about? You know, Samsung's selling like mad in China right now. And you know, it's, you know, very, very profitable for them. Is this one of those things where they're going to, you know, all of a sudden face stiff competition? And if what you're saying is, you know, is true, then yeah, this is terrible news for Samsung. You know, Samsung is similar in it that it is a, you know, nation-backed company, so they can, you know, but they're not China. You know, it's a different league between those two nation states, and if they decided to, if China says you can't sell any phones here, only Lenovo can sell, you know, Android phones here, then Samsung has to fight toe to toe in the rest of the world markets. You know, they're doing well in India, but if Lenovo can, you know, take over the Android market in 5 years, then what's to stop them from, you know, steamrolling through India as well? You know, it'd be interesting.
Which is what happened with the computer stuff, but
yeah, and Motorola is a, like you said, you know, if it's a good product and it's got, you know, good stuff, they've got good engineers, and you know, obviously they've got all the manufacturing capabilities to build great phones because they build all the iPhones. You know, there is a legitimate, you know, room there for you know, some serious competition from them, if that's their strategy, and you know, probably it is. I should say,
yeah.
If you are a communist nation and that isn't your strategy, what are you doing? Why are you communist?
So here's, you know, taking it down a different path. I get why Google is selling Lenovo. So why did they buy Nest?
Yeah. And this I think it's for the same reason that they're not canceling the Nexus division. I think they see a lot of potential.
Yeah, but Google doesn't build any of the Nexus devices.
Well, they design them.
They just partner with other companies.
They design
them. They're not in the manufacturing. Okay, I'm just saying they're not in the manufacturing business.
Right.
And right. And Nest is manufacturing, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is a hardware company. But what they bought, from what I can tell, is so. And I guess this article that I linked to, you know, and just kind of the reading articles over the last couple of weeks about the Nest purchase, is that they bought an engineer and his team. That's what they wanted, and they've thrown them into being like the centerpiece of, you know, of gadgets in the Google universe. You've got the Nexus devices that there's engineers designing. You've got Google Glass that there's engineers designing. You've got the you've got all the different pieces of hardware that they, you know, everything from the cars that take, you know, that for the street view cars to the automated cars to your different street view gadgets, and I'm sure they've got a billion other gadgets that they want to get into. You know, the whole contacts lens thing, and it's a group that, yeah, maybe they'll need to do some manufacturing, but clearly they don't want to do a lot of manufacturing. But what they really bought was a group of, and this is, and probably they hate being called this, but really great gadget engineers, guys that understand the power of a system on a chip. And that is funny. I've read the I can't remember his name, the guy who's the CEO of Nest. I've read a couple of things about him, and basically, like, the generally what they think, or what his success is attributed to, Tony Fadell, that's his name. The dude who helped pioneer the iPod, what I've read his success is credited to is the idea of taking a system on a chip, connecting it to some sort of a small screen and some sort of an input device, and quote-unquote thinking differently about it, giving it wireless ability, and then, you know, and moving on from there. So you get these tiny little computers with unique form factors designed for specific tasks. That's what he's great at designing. That's what his team is great at designing. So if you can give them a specific task and then tell them to build hardware around that, that's what they'll do for you. And I think that is really what Google wants to be able to do. They want to be able to design things of that nature and pioneer that sort of thing. They don't want to sit back and figure out how to manufacture at scale. That's what Apple's great at. They don't want to compete on that, you know, on that level. They want to, you know, they like the Nexus because it quote unquote sets the standard for what, you know, an Android device can be, a pure Android device. And obviously it gets pretty good competition from Samsung, and HTC, but they would say that, you know, that's the reason why the Nexus exists is because it pushes that forward. It causes them to compete harder, compete on price, compete on performance. You know, so if that's where they're going to go with the whole Nest thing and the Nest purchase, I think it's going to work out for them. There's also the whole, like, weird, they're buying every robotics company out there. They're buying all the cool ones.
That's
and
true.
Then on top of it, the purchase earlier this week that you linked to of artificial intelligence startup DeepMind. For more than $500 million. And it's funny, that's another company that everybody sits in to go, they didn't buy DeepMind. They hired the DeepMind team for $500 million and whatever their salary is. And the question everybody asks is, like, why did they buy DeepMind? And it's because they're artificial intelligence experts in a aspect of AI, or, you know, a subcategory of AI called deep understanding, deep knowledge. And from what I gather, there's only like 50 guys in the entire world that are considered experts on deep understanding, and like five of them work for DeepMind. And every single one of those 50 guys get paid insane salaries for whatever organization they work for. And Google keeps hiring more of them, along with a giant robot, you know, robotics divisions and hardware device guys. They've got this, like, they're basically, it's funny. What it seems to me is that they're doing what Apple has done. They're doing for design what Apple has done for manufacturing, where Apple is, like, buying and patenting manufacturing techniques and materials that are going to, you know, put them in a place where nobody can compete. It's like, you know, the sapphire glass for the iPhone. There's no reason to expect that there will be a sapphire glass Samsung phone in the next year and a half, 2 years, because Apple bought all the manufacturing equipment, they hired all the people that know how to do it, and they patented it all before ever launching the phone that uses it as a, you know, sales point. Like, oh, you're using Gorilla Glass? Lame. We're using Sapphire. Whereas, you know, and they're doing that. They've done that with, like, the last, you know, what was it? We talked about they bought 14 companies in 2013, and most of them were clearly companies designed around cornering different manufacturing techniques that nobody else would be able to compete with, so they can keep their unique, you know, view, and not just patenting it, but like buying the only equipment that exists, so that China can't just, you know, steal the IP and, you know, go do it themselves. And likewise, Google is clearly trying to corner this market of, you know, big data. And the other great thing that Nest does, and I think one of the reasons why they like them, is because it collects a tremendous amount of data about what you're doing in your home. You know, and you couple that with some these deep knowledge AI guys and the most, impressive computing network in the world, aka the Google servers, I think you set yourself up for some, you know, really incredible computational results. And, you know, that's the sort of thing they love.
So are you thinking, I mean, I'm starting to get the sense that Nest is done. Like, it's a good thing I didn't buy a smart thermostat.
Yeah, no, I don't.
That's not going to be their focus anymore.
I don't think so. I think you might see one or two more products come out. You know, they're going to fill out whatever they had in the pipeline. I bet they'll finish that rollout, but then they're going to move on.
What a shame, man. I was excited about the smart home, and they're just whatever.
Well, I don't think it's
Google now.
Yeah, I'm gonna say I don't think it's done. I think that there are other companies that are gonna really. It's just that they bought the best engineers at it, and you know. But at least they got out there and showed people. They showed what people are willing to pay for a really great device. I think is the big thing, and you know, hopefully somebody else will come along and decide that they want to be the Nest of home automation, because there's a space for it, you know.